Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again with another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, we're very much in kind of the throes of summer here, but still have a decent amount of content to go over and some great questions that have been submitted from our listeners. We'll start this podcast, as we do all of them, by thanking our title sponsor, Louisiana Hot Sauce. Been a fantastic partner for us. They continue to support us and allow us to kind of grow this podcast and entertain some of the ideas that we probably thought were a little too aggressive a couple years ago and build this format out to be a little bit more of a complete product at the end of the day. So I want to thank them for their partnership and what they've meant to the podcast over time, and thank you, the listener, as always, for the support that you've given us and the pretty aggressive level of support that you've given them, particularly on social media.
Absolutely, man. We look forward to trying their new flavors as well. And thanks for y'all listeners, no doubt, making us the most popular FSU podcast by far. We owe it to y'all. So we're very much appreciative of it, and we're excited about the new places we'll be taking this podcast for the season. Ingram, tonight I wanted to kind of riff on some topics. I know we'll do some questions at the end and some buy or sell and whatnot. But the first one I wanted to talk about is the concept of recruiting locally. I had a conversation with somebody on staff, and you compare notes and whatnot, and hey, is this kid a take? Is that kid a take? And there's been a lot of excitement out there about Florida State doing well in California and all across the country, you know, nationwide Noles, West Coast Noles, and all that stuff. And look, that's important. But it's absolutely clear in that coaching room that Willie Taggart has told his coaches, we are not going to go across the country to get a kid when we can get a kid of similar talent back home in our home base. And that's Florida and parts of South Georgia. Period. So a Kayvon Thibodeau, yeah. You're going to go all the way to California to try and get him. You're going to recruit your butt off to get him. If he likes Bama's more kind of pro-style, not like pro-style offense, but like, you know, business-like approach, he may end up at Alabama. If he likes Florida State's more kind of family compared to Saban, more the Dabo-style approach that I think Taggart has in some ways, then he may end up at Florida State. You don't need to accept commits in May from kids out west who have very similar talent or lesser talent levels than some of the kids you're recruiting in your own state or your own region. And the reason for that, if y'all don't know, is because those kids from way across the country have a higher bust rate due to homesickness. For every Jaden Woodby, there's a bunch of other kids. You know, there's a Malik Henry. You know, there's a lot of kids at Florida State and elsewhere who didn't work out. You'd rather get guys who you have a better feel for and guys that are closer to home if you can do so and find kids of similar talent level. Now, you know, sometimes there are package deals you might want to take. For instance, maybe there's a couple kids out in California you like, not good enough to take them, but maybe their buddy is a really good quarterback or something, man, if you catch my drift here. If he wanted to come, maybe you'd take those two kids. But I do want to point that out. That's something I've noticed a lot of people, you know, West Coast Noles. That's great. That's cool. It's not going to be more than a kid or two a class, if that. They're in the most talented state in the country, Florida. There's a reason Willie Taggart left Oregon to come back to Florida, because of the talent in this state. It's not because facilities, you know, or money. Oregon's got more of that. But Oregon, you can't move Florida's talent to Oregon, so you move back to Florida to get that talent. I just wanted to open the show discussing about that. They are very much focused on recruiting in the state of Florida and in parts of the Southeast.
You're right. You have a higher hit rate overall. You also, and you don't ever want to be in a place where you start letting outside influences impact how you evaluate kids or where you place them on your board. But you also don't want to be blind to the fact that, you know, taking a bunch of defensive backs from New Jersey and other kids from California or the West Coast is a pretty quick recipe for alienating yourself with some of the more, you know, powerful figures within your own state, whether they be high school coaches or kids involved on 7-on-7 or anything else. So, yeah, I think there's a multitude of reasons for why you want to work inside out. And when you do see a kid from California commit, it lets you know all the more about what they really think of them, particularly if you start to take early commits from kids out west.
Exactly. I went up to IMG on Wednesday morning and got to chat with Dante Lucas and Evan Neal, and I did not get to talk with Jaleel McCray, but I did get to see him. Tell you what, he's moving around really well. Looked good doing ladder drill. I'd say he's a solid 230 pounds. Obviously, he's not participating fully in spring, because he has the hand injury that he's still getting healed up for him. I talked to their defensive coordinator. You know, he said, hey, we don't want to let this guy take contact until he's fully good. You know, he's got college he's got to think about. So Jaleel McCray looked good running around. Man, if he stays healthy, that could end up being a really good take by them. You know, granted, he's the kid who has two ACLs already in his high school career. And that's always going to be a concern moving forward. But I think that was encouraging. You know, I spoke to Dante Lucas, and I think I've told you all, look, because of how tight Telly Lockett is with Dante's mom and with Dante, and because he coached his brother at Central, and his brother now, you know, he went to West Virginia and he plays for the Bucks, and you know, knew his dad, all those factors, I strongly do not see Dante Lucas going anywhere else. However, I think as we talked about this at the time, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but he's a kid who likes attention and wants to enjoy the process. And I don't think he was planning to commit this early. He just kind of got swept up in the moment. And, you know, it certainly is recruiting pretty hard at Florida State. But he also really wants to take his visits. He told me, he said, I want to take all five visits. I said, your kid is also going to enroll early, or you want to. I know you have a lot of academic stuff you got to get working on in order to make sure that happens. How do you think you're going to balance that with taking your visits? And he said, I think I'll be able to work it out and do it. It's something I do want to do, but that's something I have to think about too. You know, he said he's recruiting Evan Neal to have to come with him to Florida State, saying, hey, my pitch is let's start together for 3 years and go pro. So yeah, that was encouraging to hear, certainly for Florida State fans. But he is going to visit Florida this weekend, he told me, which is not entirely surprising. Like we said, he's going to take his visits. But you talk to anybody at Florida State, they're not slacking off on letting him know that he's one of their top players in the class, and they are aware that he's going to take his visits. And that's really kind of the key in this, is figuring out what your leverage is. You know, if you're a really good player like he is, well, you probably have the leverage to take some visits and enjoy yourself. If you're not a good player, or if you're not a special player, maybe you don't have that leverage. But he does, and he's communicated that with the staff.
Anything else stand out from your time at IMG?
Trey Sanders' mom, he confirmed to me, is a Florida fan. His brother is going to enroll at UF as a walk-on. I don't think that was an option that Florida State wanted to do with the brother. The dad, Trey Sanders' dad, is a Florida State fan. Trey Sanders is the five-star running back out of Port St. Joe up there in the Panhandle, so very close to Tallahassee. I asked him if he was going to go to UF this weekend, and he told me no. He actually has to study for finals, but he said, I will be at Florida State the following weekend because I'm going home after the semester's over. So something to watch out for there, certainly another visit from an elite back. In fact, I think Florida State is trying next weekend. This will be the weekend of the 26th, Memorial Day weekend, I believe. That's next weekend, right?
Yes, it is.
They're trying to get a bunch of IMG kids up. So maybe Michael Redding, the 2020 receiver, Jaleel McCray, Dante Lucas, Trey Sanders, and Evan Neal, who also really likes Florida State a whole bunch. You know, mentioned that he has a good relationship with Coach Pimp. Also, he likes Coach Searles at Miami. In my opinion, it's going to be a Florida State-Miami battle for the five-star offensive tackle, Evan Neal. But he looked pretty good. Evan's actually lost 30 pounds since February, which is, I mean, that's a lot of weight. I've got a picture of him from his measured, like check-in at Nike off Snapchat, and it said 6'7 and a quarter, 391. But he's not, like, sloppy fat. You know, he actually looks like he's in better shape than Dante Lucas, who's, like, 30 pounds lighter than he is, or at least than he was. Evan looks like he's in really good shape. I asked him, I said, you know, what does that do for you as far as proving to people that you are a tackle and not a guard? And he said, well, I think people should have seen it the whole time. You know, I was going to kind of challenge him on that, but he kind of kept talking. But in my mind, I was thinking, well, no. I mean, I know you're tall, but 390 is not a tackle. That's a guard. But 360 at 6'7 and a quarter, that's a tackle, sure. So he's clearly one of the top tackles on FSU's board and on Miami's board. They both want him. That's going to be a great battle to watch there. So they seem to be in good shape at IMG. And I also talked to Quayshon Fuller, their defensive end commitment at Florida State. And he had an interesting story. And I've known Quayshon for a while, you know, because he's from my hometown. Good kid, real bright kid, big-time Florida State fan, like really knows his FSU stuff, knows who's on the roster, watches them play. I don't think he and the new staff got off on the right foot. And depending on who you ask, I don't know who's responsible for that or at the time. I think he wanted to feel more love from them, and I think they wanted to figure out where he fit in their defense to show, or to see if he did fit in their defense, to figure out how much love to show him. And I think his relationship now, after Florida State came down and visited him at school, and then after this weekend that he went up there and talked to the staff and met with him, I think his relationship with them is much better. And I said, hey, I know you weren't satisfied with the answers they gave you the first time you visited up there. What changed this time? And he said, I just think the answers that they gave me made more sense. So, you know, he was asking, like, how many defensive ends are you going to play in a game? And, you know, how do you balance wanting to get a lot of guys in, but also, look, guys like Kando and Burns are going to be trying to go pro, according to Quayshon. They're going to need to get their stats and their numbers so they can turn pro. But apparently whatever answer he was given there was better. Now, this is interesting. He is very intent on being a defensive end. And I do see this a lot of times in bigger players. They grow up, you know, having the athletic advantage over everybody. And remember the Mike Morris talk we had last week? Quayshon's a better athlete than Mike is. And they're different types of players. But Quayshon's like 275, 280 right now. He told me his goal is to be 260 by the season to prove that he is a defensive end. Now, does he have 20 pounds to lose? Probably, yeah. He didn't play a whole lot last year because he was injured. He seems to be pretty motivated to show what he can do and prove that he's a defensive end and a Florida State caliber defensive end. If he gets down to 260, maybe he'll show that, but maybe he won't. You know, that's going to be up to him as far as how hard he wants to work and what kind of shape he wants to be in. But I also asked him, I said, how committed are you? You know, are you like 100% in? And he said, look, I'm committed. I don't want to put a percentage on it, but also I'm absolutely looking around to make sure that Florida State's my best option. You know, he was wearing a Georgia shirt and a Florida State backpack when I walked up there. And we got to chat for a while because Lehigh was having a lightning delay at their practice. You know, I chatted with some college coaches who were there too. But I think that's smart by him. And he said, look, you know, I almost feel like I committed real early, and that's cool, but just want to make sure I'm making the right choice here in FSU. And I think Florida State wants to see what kind of shape he's going to get in, you know?
Sounds like both parties are still haven't necessarily left the evaluation process.
I would agree with that, yeah. Because at 280, at his size right now, he cannot play defensive end at Florida State. Not in this scheme. At 260, sure. Now, what is the chance he actually gets down to 260 and then stays at that weight through the rest of his college career? I looked down, I said, question, what size shoe do you wear? And he said, 16. You shake this kid's hand, I mean, he's grabbing you up to your wrist.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he could be 290 and more in shape, you know, than he is now. But he could be 290 in college after a year or two in a weight program, easy. I just don't know if he knows it, you know, yet. But certainly it's still an option, you know, a player who they like and a player who's committed to them. I think if he gets, you know, the weight off, if he wants to be, like assuming he wants to be a defensive end, which he says he does, then I think he'll end up in the class. If he doesn't, or maybe if he sees a better fit elsewhere, then, you know, I root for kids to go to the best fit for them, not for kids to go to Florida State. So, you know, we'll have to see how that develops, and I know I'll talk to him more as the year goes on.
Fair enough. Before we move on to other subjects, anything else stand out to you just in your recent visits or anything else you wanted to touch on recruiting before we made a shift?
Yeah, one name that we've had on our Tomahawk Nation recruiting board for a while is Nick Cross, kid out of the D.C. area, you know, big-time hitter at safety and a player who I know guys on the staff like Harlan Barnett are very high on. He's actually going to make an official visit to Florida State June 22nd. And I don't know that everybody realized, including myself, just how quickly he was going to schedule these officials and he's going to take them in the summer. And this is a new thing this year. Probably a lot of fans don't even realize this, how many kids are taking official visits in the spring and in the summer. Now, for FSU, I don't think they're going to bring in quite as many kids on officials as other schools will because they might want a little more proof of concept, you know, with what the new staff is doing. But if a kid wants to come in early and he's going to make an early decision, then you're not going to tell him no because you may never get him back on a visit. They seem to have a really good relationship with Nick Cross. They clearly have a need for safeties in the secondary, and I think Florida State has a good chance to get him. He's going to take an official to Alabama, too. I think Auburn as well is being talked about. But, yeah, man, they seem to be doing a good job there with him. And he is a big-time hitter. That's a kid who I know they're really high on in the way that they were kind of high on Woodby.
So, interesting name to watch there. If we go back to last week's pod, we had a question from a listener about, like, the best high school, best county out of each state. Well, Nick Cross, if we're answering the high school question, I don't think we touched on Maryland, but he plays for DeMatha Catholic up there, which is an absolute powerhouse. Never a bad idea to get yourself in the door at that school. So a kid who could pay pretty significant dividends on multiple fronts. While we're on that subject, Bud, I want to go back to our South Carolina question or our South Carolina answer from last week's question and say that I blew it by not saying York County, the county that Rock Hill's in. That's definitely year over year. If you could choose any county in a state to recruit, that would be the one in South Carolina. Rock Hill has been real friendly to Florida State historically. Chris Hope, D. Feaster, they've gotten some pretty significant players out of there. Jadeveon Clowney's one of the more recent kids that's come out of that part of the state, but we got some decent feedback, and I appreciate people pointing that out. That is the place where you would want to carve out a little fiefdom for yourself in that particular state.
Good call on that, man. Absolutely. We had a couple questions a couple weeks ago about, like, hey, will this offense turn off quarterbacks from coming to Florida State? You know, it's not really a system that a lot of NFL teams run, et cetera. You know, at the time, I thought, no, it won't. But here's some interesting stuff. Sports Illustrated had an article, and I've heard a couple of NFL podcasts now. God, they're boring usually, but I had some people send them to me. Do you know where all these NFL teams are going to visit for scheme stuff? Oklahoma.
I was going to say. I have an idea as to where they're going.
Yeah, Golden Boy Lincoln Riley, man. A lot of RPO stuff, a lot of keeping people off balance. Wide open offense running a turbo tempo. I mean, just crazy fast. I don't think they're stopping a whole lot in College Station to learn about innovations and changes they can make to their game.
Innovations, no. I do not see that as being a destination for them if they're looking for the latest and cutting-edge ideas. But that's Lincoln Riley is just an absolute savant when it comes to the game. What was he like? Was he the head coach at ECU as like a 31-year-old or something? Like,
yes.
Remarkable how accomplished that guy was at such a young age and has carried on, continued to have success, and now sits at the big office of one of the main programs in the country. But if you're going out to that part of the world and you're looking for the newest football ideas, I think you're stopping in Norman before you put the idea of going down to College Station in your mind.
So, no, I think football is going one way. It's not going in reverse, is my answer to that. Another topic here. Ingram, did you happen to see who Florida coach Sal Cincere claimed to have coached?
yeah, I saw this. Tweets. I mean, these have been, this has been a popular conversation. We won't spend too much time on this, as this has been out for a while, but just absurd. Yeah, I mean, and a kid that transferred to offensive line, another kid that maybe an 11-day carryover while he was suffered one of the worst knee injuries.
He was hurt.
We talked about it. He was in a damn scooter. Whatever. What's the brand name that's slipping my mind right now?
Hover Round.
Hover Round. Thank you.
They're in the Grand Canyon. Hover Round.
Hover Round. Yeah.
Yeah. It echoes back.
We made that joke a couple years ago. It's it's worth finding on YouTube.
Still good.
It's just hilarious. Yes. I can go to the Grand Canyon in my hover round. This is incredible. Yes.
The thing is, I don't know. I have a lot of feelings about this. Number one, Florida has a lot of guys in the NFL. They really probably shouldn't need to do this. They really could just promote the guys who just went to the league, and that'd be fine. Like, hey, this is Florida. We put out kids regardless. But if you want to highlight the kids that your coach has actually put in the league recently, I'm actually okay with that, too. You know, if you had a big-time hand in recruiting somebody to a school or you coach that guy for several years and help develop him, put him on your poster. I didn't have any problem with Jimbo using Jamarcus Russell, right? You know, what was his line that he told kids? He was like, I make good quarterbacks great, and I take great quarterbacks and get a pick number one overall. But Derek Nnadi was recruited by Odell Higgins and played for Odell. Different position, not DN, D-tackle. Josh Sweat, like you said, no, just absolutely not. He was here. It wasn't very, very long before Sinceri took off.
10 days, 2 weeks tops, somewhere in that window. No reason to splice it down at Zach. But
and he was hurt coming back from the injury. And then Rick Leonard, the one guy who Sinceri did coach, like I think 2 years, then moved to offensive tackle. Now, I think part of that was the demographics on the offensive defense, by the way, for people who want a little backstory there. But still, like, I don't. Do you want to brag about a guy you coached for 2 years who then moved to the completely other side of the ball and got drafted? Maybe, but man.
And if the play is like, oh, we'll get you to the NFL, well, why didn't Sal Sinceri mention the guys he just was coaching in the NFL? I think this has gotten to be some kind of like social media graphics arm race or something like that. People are just starting to be dumb with the stuff that they try to grab and grasp for and put on these things, and a couple of them have been fairly embarrassing, whether it's the situation that we just talked about or Tennessee not spelling Darby's name right, or I mean, it just
reeks. Well, they said it me. Derby, right?
Yeah, Ronald Derby. Mm. Handsome horse. Yeah. I mean, you know, they got it half right. So, I just think it's an arms race and people are being, or just reaching for straws to have these meaningless graphics. I agree with you. If you did it, claim it, do whatever you need to, but it doesn't seem to be a reason why some of these schools are putting some straight silliness on some of these graphics.
Exactly. So, okay, by the way, also on this graphic, I'm going to throw some names at you here. Do you know who Hunter Bradley is?
I do not, no.
Do you know who Logan Cook is?
No.
Because they're on this graphic multiple times each, like claimed by Dan Mullen and by Greg Knox. Hunter Bradley is a long snapper. Logan Cook is a punter.
Mm. Makes me feel all the better as to being unaware of who those gentlemen were.
To Sal's credit, he did delete this. Like, he got so much negative feedback, I think, that people were like, wait a second, this one's not just silly, it's just like out and out not true. So, what's wrong with just claiming the guys you actually had a decent hand in coaching? Why do you have to go to this extreme? I don't know. It's kind of silly to me. Hey, they need all the help recruiting they can get. Hey, the Vegas win season over-under win totals came out. Did you see that?
I did see that, yeah.
Looks like we're spot on with what Vegas was going to say. I think we've been saying they're going to say 8.5 for a while, and a couple shows ago even gave like a good explanation for why that would be. So I've had a lot of people in the mentions, man. If you look at our account, that's crazy. They're going to easily go over that. They're going to be 10-2, 11-1. I don't know, man. They must not be putting their money where their mouth is, because otherwise this line would be moving up, up, up. And I'm not seeing it move at all. It looks like it's going to stick at 8.5, man.
It's an accurate number. I mean, I think there's some in the fan base that may need a little dose of reality as to what's in head, but there's also some that I think have a pretty good idea as to both the overall momentum and direction of the program, and that doesn't necessarily mean that you're looking at a team that's going to post 10 wins or more in 2018.
I want to see those Twitter fingers turn to trigger fingers when it comes to actually pulling the trigger and making that bet. If you're telling me this team's going to go 10-2 or 11-1 in the regular season, you need to be betting that over. If you have that level of confidence, a win and a half discrepancy with your prediction versus Vegas, you need to be hitting that. Like, I think Stanford is probably an 8-4 team, not a 9.5. I'm on that under all day. You know, if you see it, something you really disagree with, go hit it. If you live in a state where it's legal to bet, et cetera.
Yeah. UF at 7.5. Miami's also at 8.5. Clemson at 10. That was kind of interesting to me.
Miami's schedule is, like, super soft. So I did think about going over on Miami, but the quarterback did set the record for all-time touchdowns in the history of the program, but I'm just not super confident in him, you know? So I don't know if I want to do that or not. Clemson, the problem with Clemson in 10 is that it feels like a push number almost.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are you real confident they're going to go 11-1 or 12-0?
I have a hard time seeing that team lose two games.
Well, I have a real hard time seeing that team lose three games. So I think the play there, if you're going to make one, is over. But it's just hard to go over 10, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that team has lost games before like Pitt, like Syracuse. You know, they really should have lost NC State 2 years ago. That kid missed a chippy at the end.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, and that's a good point. That's a good point. It's easy to get lost in just the roster, but historically they've had a game or two each year that they either suffered a hard to explain loss or perhaps should have. At the same time, of these four numbers, if you asked me to make me bet on one, I'd probably take Clemson in the over.
Okay. I can totally see that too. Ultimately, I feel like the ones that I disagree with the most, and you could look for this piece on SB Nation probably Friday morning. Full disclosure, recording this on Thursday evening. I've got this piece mostly written along with Bill Connolly, but Stanford 9.5 to me was surprising. Also, Washington at 8.5 is, to me, an over bet all day. Like, that's a veteran-loaded Washington team with an excellent college quarterback. I don't really care what Jake Browning's NFL potential is at Washington, because I'm not betting on him in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I'm betting on him in college football. And in college football, he's pretty damn good. And I don't really care if Washington matches up with teams like Alabama and Clemson and Ohio State, because these numbers are for the regular season only.
Right.
Now, I think Florida State can get to 10 wins if you include the bowl game, potentially, because all they got to do is go 9-3. And then they'll be in a decent but not amazing bowl at 9-3, and they have a shot to get to 10. I think 10-2 in the regular season is not super realistic. By the way, switching gears here a little bit, man. Our Penn State blog emailed me, and they said, "Hey, you know, how do you guys set expectations for a really elite program? You know, because Penn State's now kind of getting back to that level." And I said, "Well, if it's me, I would look to history. What do you see yourself as?" And I think Florida State's kind of in that, what some people would say they're like a top six program. Some people would probably say top eight, top 10, top 12. I don't think anybody would really think they're outside of that as a program. You know, maybe not a team this year, but would you agree that that's kind of fair? Kind of in that somewhere in that range?
Yeah, I'll put it this way. If you think that Florida State's less than a top 10 program, I question as to whether or not you have an agenda.
Yeah.
So I think that's fair. Yeah.
I looked and I said, okay, how many teams have averaged 9 wins a season over the last 3 years, the last 5 years, the last 10 years? It's a lot fewer than I thought. You know, only 13 teams have averaged 9 wins plus over the last 5 years in the Power Five, not including like the Boise's and the schools that don't play anybody, no UCF national title, none of that stuff. Power Five teams, last 5 years, 13 teams have done it, averaged 9 wins. Now, Florida State's one of them, obviously. That's really hard to do, man. You're talking, there's 128 teams in college football, so just call it 130. That's basically the top 10% of college football. I thought that was a really interesting number, and I expanded it to 10 years and then took it down to 3 years, and it doesn't really change. It's basically 12 teams, 13 teams, 14 teams that are able to average 9 wins a year. So if you're averaging 9 wins a year over a multi-year span, that may not sound great to you, but that's actually really tough to do. You know, it is one thing that puts Bobby Bowden's record kind of more in greater perspective, and it's very impressive. You know, obviously it's very impressive, but it is something that it just shows you how hard it is to do. So I sent that to our Penn State guy, and I thought it was a cool nugget I wanted to share on the podcast tonight.
Appreciate you doing so. Why don't we take a moment here real quickly, Bud, and talk about one of our partners who has been with us since day one, has established a level of operating that has done a lot of things for Tallahassee, and it's certainly transformed that part of town, whether it be Township, Mad Show, Centrale. But they're also growing, and I've seen on social media, so I don't think this is any that we're letting any secret out of the bag, but it looks like Township is going to have a Fort Lauderdale location here in the very near future.
Indeed, man. That's going to be pretty cool. You know, able to have them reach all of our listeners. As you know, a huge proportion of our listenership is in Florida, and that's really cool, man, because Township, out of the three concepts there in College Town, Township might actually be my favorite. They have an actual chef, and their beer is really cold and good and great variety. You know, it's not all IPA. It's not all lagers. It's not all Bud Light. There's a really good mix. It's a great outdoor, you know, outdoor scene when the weather's nice, and they also have climate controlled ability, you know, when it's not so nice. So great sponsor there with For the Table, Madso, Central, and Township. And congrats to them on expanding to out of Fort Lauderdale. And I know we'll have more details about that coming soon.
But one of the things that we just generally wanted to talk about, and again, we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on any particular subject tonight, but just kind of the overall concept as to the true talent of this team and what is actually the composition of the roster as far as, kind of value added players or guys that are have the ability to really make a meaningful contribution.
Yeah, so this is just a note I threw in here. We've had some questions, you know, hey, isn't this team more talented than that team if you look at the recruiting rankings and whatnot? And those are a great place to start. They're not necessarily, to me, a great place to finish. I think you have to bring in a certain amount of high school talent to even really be in the conversation for national titles. I've written about that a lot with the blue chip ratio at SB Nation. But, you know, you look at this team for a long time, and longtime podcast listeners will tell you that we were saying this forever, and people didn't like it. Do you recall this? And I would say, hey, this hit rate they have right now is awesome, but it's not sustainable. It's just not. Like, not every single kid you sign is going to turn into a stud. You are going to have some busts. There are some busts coming. I guarantee it, just because history over thousands and thousands and thousands of players signing all across the country says there will be. They had a little run there that, look, there's certainly evaluation.
Yeah, everything hit.
But it's also luck.
A lot of luck.
It's not mostly luck, but there's a luck portion, or there's a luck proponent to the, or component to this that people didn't, they don't like accepting that, but that it is absolutely, to me, there is no doubt that there is a luck component to your hit rate as far as your recruits turning out the way you want them to. Now, there's certain things you can do to impact them, certainly. Development's a big thing. This team has a development deficit of about a year, some would say about a year and a half, depending on when you think this staff started not really caring, the old staff, that is. But this idea that they were going to continue to recruit and hit the way they were hitting, man, it wasn't realistic back then. But now people are, I think, are a little more receptive to the message, maybe?
I mean, just go back and run through your mind some of those things. And yes, there's praise to be given in all of these individual situations for coaching or the identification of talent. But you took Xavier Rhodes, made him a DB, and he blossomed into what he was. Greg Reed wasn't a guaranteed thing. Greg Reed was a super dynamic running back in high school, and I know was a highly rated recruit, but it wasn't a sure thing he was going to translate as a college defensive back. LaMarcus Joyner was a great prospect with a ton of upside, but you don't necessarily know that a kid with that frame is going to be able to contribute at the level he is. Bjorn Warner was a German kid who had barely played football that you went to Salisbury, you know, some New England prep school and turned into one of the better defensive ends of the last decade for this program. It's just some wild stuff that happened for you. And again, there's praise to be given for those things, but that's just not necessarily a series of events that are always going to – the dice aren't always going to fall your way on all those kids, and eventually kind of math just catches up to you.
So, you know, one thing I've been thinking about here, you know who else has had an insanely high hit rate for a couple of years now? Maybe an unsustainably high hit rate? That's not to say it won't still be high, but, you know, maybe they've had some hit rate luck. To me, that would be that team over there in Clemson. And I don't know if you caught this or not, but this week I saw a 5-star offensive tackle, Josh Belk, to transfer after only a month on campus. Did you catch that?
Is he going to South Carolina?
I think that's the word, but nothing official as far as I can see. I'm sure when Clemson signed a 5-star D tackle, they were over the moon. But there's a lot of stuff outside your control as a college football coach, and stuff that was outside of Jimbo's control. And that, I know it's very popular to bash him at every turn, but we try to do it for stuff that he deserves to get criticized for, not just everything. The downturn in talent, somewhat due to the hit rate regressing to the mean, was always going to happen. Now you add on to that a little bit of a development deficit, kind of a term I came up with. Maybe somebody else did too. I don't know. I still think this is a super talented roster. But if you look at this roster and compare it to like Alabama or Georgia or specifically this year's Clemson team, I would say it doesn't match up very well. Now, Clemson's going to lose a whole lot of talent off this current team. I mean, a bunch of real difference makers, especially on the defensive side of the ball. We'll see what they look like next year. Clearly, they're going to continue to recruit well. But I do think that the talent gap between Florida State and Clemson this year is probably about as big as it's going to be for a while. I think it's going to narrow some.
I was watching this documentary about the downfall of the Royal Bank of Scotland. Not exactly content that I thought I would find anything for the Nullcast for, but one thing that I took out of it I thought was pretty interesting is that, you know what the average run of success for a banking CEO is as far as longevity?
4 years.
History has shown anything more than 6 to 7 years and you start to get a pretty significant decline.
Huh.
I think that's, I just think that's something that applies to a lot of different aspects. You know, messages get stale, people rub people the wrong way. I think that there's just a kind of a limited window in time. Obviously, you have these outliers, people that are able to stay somewhere, whether it be a corporate institution or a college athletic program for 2.5 decades or something like that. But for the most part, when you've got somebody that's just trying to burn the flame as much as possible, it's there's a pretty finite window for which you can operate.
I think that makes a lot of sense, man. In light of the Boise State news that Florida State will open against Boise State in 2019 in Jacksonville, I think we've known this for a while as far as that they would play in Jacksonville. I didn't know there was going to be the season opener necessarily, but that is official now. Do you have any hot takes on that? If not, I have an interesting question to kind of spin off this.
I don't know. That kind of feels clunky to me, to be honest. I don't know exactly how to describe that. I'm not in love with it. I like the idea of us going to Boise as a fan, as a novelty. I don't know that it's a great thing for the program, but the opening in Jacksonville, I'm not sure I see a great appeal to that. I'm sure there's a check being cut for it, but it doesn't exactly excite me.
I know we have a lot of Jacksonville listeners, and they get mad at me when I say I'm not a huge fan of the city of Jacksonville, mainly because it takes like 8 hours to drive across Jacksonville. Like, the people of Jacksonville are fine. I don't hate y'all.
It's the largest city in the country from a landmass standpoint.
It's ridiculous. It doesn't need all that land. Condense Jacksonville a little bit, please. I don't know. I mean, I'll be at the game, I know, but it's just it's not a destination city to me. It's on the other side of the state. I agree it feels kind of clunky. What would you say the risk-reward is for FSU going out to and playing Boise?
I mean, I think you bear a lot more risk on it than you do reward. I just don't know that you get, you know, maybe you go up there and it's like a 8 o'clock game and you're maybe one or two options on the TV and you're able to capture a vast majority of the country, particularly if you're opening up there as well. But I don't love the idea of traveling up there and playing on that field. I love the idea as a fan of watching it. I'm just not sure that I love it from a program perspective.
I think I agree with you, man. Like it probably doesn't help you a whole lot. It could hurt you if you lose it, for sure. Here's something for you. And by the way, the Boise series was scheduled by FSU's former athletic director, Randy Spetman. So that was a long time ago.
I mean, it feels like it was scheduled by Dave Hart or something like that. I mean, it feels like it's been on the schedule for 15 years or something like that.
So, you know, that's just something to think about here. It's not – this is not Stan Wilcox's doing. Florida State does not have a lot of money to be thrown around. So I know a lot of people are like, well, why can't they buy out of that? They're trying to get money for a standalone football facility and a bunch of other things. I know, you know, basketball wants nicer facilities and a baseball stadium and – you know, they're not always the best at raising money compared to some other schools. So to go spend it is maybe not something they want to do. If you were at FSU's AD and you would schedule a home-and-home, which, by the way, I wish they would play some home-and-homes and not these ridiculous neutral site games that feel like, I don't know, Alabama was cool last year in the Georgia Dome, but that was partially because it was just such a new stadium. You know,
and it was Bama, and it was the fact that you walked away with $5 million. I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah, they feel so sterile, though. You know, mm-hmm. These NFL things, like the Dallas one against Oklahoma State, there wasn't really any passion there, and FSU was coming off a big time undefeated streak. Like, this is, I wish they would play some games in college stadiums. Like, that's really kind of what makes college. If you want to just focus on the quality of football, The NFL's better. Better players, bigger hits, more competitive games on a weekly basis, closer games. College is the pageantry and the rivalry and the actual connection because nobody graduated from Jacksonville Jaguars University, right?
I'm pretty sure there's some fans in the Northeast who think they went to their pro school university.
Oh, Pittsburgh Steelers U. Oh, yeah, that's probably true.
Philly Eagles U. I think there's probably a couple people who claim that.
Who would you want to schedule a home and home with?
I'll give you three. I would love to. So my two. One, I'd like to. I wouldn't mind going to Stanford, to be honest with you. I mean, that would be a pretty remarkable experience. One of the better cities in the world. One of the better institutions in the world. And you're still playing a fairly high level of football, at least historically. Hard to say what they'll be in the future. I know we did this in the early 2000s. I would be interested in going and playing at Boulder, or I'd say either Washington, University of Washington, or Colorado.
That would be cool.
Would be two other, and then one SEC school. You could give me an old any SEC West school really, or I'd love Georgia. I'd do a Tennessee. I'm not particularly interested in South Carolina.
I think that's my number one is Georgia. Like the schools are so close to each other, and yet. When's the last time they played? In that Sugar Bowl?
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you, I'm not, like, putting Georgia and Florida State has been something that the that Chick-fil-A game's been trying to do for more than a decade. That's something that they want to make happen. Whether that happens at some point, we'll see. But I would love to go see Florida State and Georgia. And there's a huge, you know, carryover or crossover in fan base. There's ton of Florida State fans in Atlanta, and all of Southwest Georgia is kind of split 50-50. I just think it'd be a great experience. Know a lot of Georgia fans that would love to schedule home and home with Florida State as well.
Absolutely. It'd be a well-attended game. You could do an actual home and home. I got a couple more that I would like to see. When's the last time Florida State played Texas?
That would be incredible. That'd be a great one.
Have they ever played Texas? Like, I can't think of a Florida State Texas football game.
Nothing comes to mind. No.
I mean, I can look it up here on like, okay, so on Wikipedia, I just pulled it up. No previous matchups. That's incredible to me, man.
Yeah.
And then from the Big Ten, I think Ohio State would be cool. Go home and home, go to the Horseshoe, have them come down here. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of their fans are kind of douchebags, but if you're going to do them, you want to go to the big stadiums. Obviously, the Oklahoma trip, everybody still talks about how awesome that was. I just think these neutral site games do take away something from college football. You know, I can remember being in college going to away games, right? Not going to neutral site games. Like, my memory is not, hey, Florida State, Alabama, and Jacksonville in 2007, or I think it was 07, right?
Yeah. I have some memories from that game. I was there.
You know, I don't have a lot. Yeah, I lost some brain cells that day.
A weekend of aggressiveness all around. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would – Georgia would be cool. Also, UCLA. Get back out to the Rose Bowl would be very, very awesome. And need that to happen.
Good call. I think I like some of yours more than mine in retrospect. But I'd love to see any of those, really. It'd be great to see. And it's just a – You're right. It's a whole. It's what makes the game unique, and it's what makes the experience of the collegiate game so special. So hopefully, we'll see more of that. At the same time, I know that a five million dollar check tends to win the day. Unfortunately,
it does. All right. I think we'll save a lot of these questions for next week, and we'll save it by ourselves for next week. I know we have some good ones saved up, but I want to end the night on some transfer talk. And some linebacker talk. Had a lot of questions over the last week. Hey, will Florida State go after Denzel Ware? He was from a local kid a couple years ago. He's a linebacker / defensive end at Kentucky. I think he was from Crestview, if I recall. And I didn't get any indication that they would. And it sounded like he was a graduate transfer from Kentucky. And he was a pretty decent player for them. But did you happen to see where he ended up?
I did not, no.
Jacksonville State.
That's right. Yeah.
Ingram, I'm going to throw a guess out here, and this might be insensitive, but typically, in my experience working college football, I do not see a whole lot of kids transfer to 1AA schools when they have the opportunity to go to big-time 1A schools. Jacksonville State is lower division ball. They're not FBS. They're FCS. To me, it makes me kind of pause and think a little bit, like, maybe he didn't actually have the option of going FBS. I'm not saying that's 100% the case, but it's exceedingly rare, I guess you would say, for a kid to do that. So I think that kind of answers that question. There's probably a reason why he left Kentucky and is now at Jacksonville State. He's not going to get better NFL exposure by doing that. So my guess is there's something else going on there. And then a lot of Xavier Peters questions this week. Xavier Peters, for those of y'all don't know, is a defensive end Florida State signed in their class of 2018. Everybody knew he had some qualifying obstacles to overcome, but Florida State still pursued him. They obviously think he's a heck of a talent, as do I. If you watched the Under Armour All-America game, you probably saw that too. But I asked somebody on the coaching staff, I said, hey, there's a lot of rumors out there that Xavier Peters is not going to qualify or that he's already, like, not qualified. And my guy said, that's just not true. He's already not qualified part. He said, look, we saw a lot of the stuff with the, you know, he put out that he graduated and stuff. Now, graduation is not the same thing as qualifying. But my guy said, as far as I know, he's doing everything he needs to do as far as taking the online classes, making sure he gets the credits to qualify. Now, he's still got to get his scores in those. He still has to pass all those, etc. They still got to get through the NCAA clearinghouse, all that stuff. I don't know where this came from because I'm getting asked about it a lot in the inbox and on Twitter. But if somebody's saying, hey, yeah, he's definitely not going to qualify, and they're saying it as like a fact, the kid clearly doesn't feel that way, and the staff doesn't feel that way. So they still think that there's a realistic shot of him qualifying and that he's doing what he needs to do in order to get qualified. So just wanted to clear that up. Obviously, we've had quite a few questions about that over the last week or so.
Been a popular topic on Twitter, or email, inbox, anything else. So glad we're able to address that. You know, when we know more, we will update you when we have additional information. But I think we'll save our buy or sell conversation for the next podcast, as we've kind of gone long on some of these questions. But it doesn't mean that we don't want to take the time to thank our friends at Resolution Home Loans. They've been a great addition. Been able to help a couple listeners, and I think a couple more are lined up here in the next month or so to close. So it's been a great partnership for us, and it's fantastic for us to be able to pair with Shannon and Chad and be able to help people in one of the more critical situations of one of the larger purchases they're going to make.
Look, they say coffee's for closers, and those guys just carry coffee around in gallon-sized thermoses. Man, those guys want to get your loan closed. It's a no-loan business. Call 844-FSU-LOAN or visit fsuhomeloans.com. I'm excited they got those ones in the pipeline. They also can work with you on home equity and refinance. So for all your home and mortgage and finance needs, give them a call, 844-FSU-LOAN, proud supporters of the Nolecast.